Hey, Brennan.
Hello, Alan.
We made it. Oh no, that was last week.
Now we're just still here.
Yeah.
Boldly going where we've been going for the last year.
Not that special. Well,
We're over the hill, 51.
still the Nothing podcast. We're still recording it. I hope you're still listening. It's been fun. It's still fun. Interestingly enough, we're leading off with a story that calls back to a previous episode, an
We're
update.
updating,
Yes.
Well, we've been a year. We're out of ideas. Let's just start from the. Oh, we should do that. We should just start from the beginning. So, The Dark Knight Rises. I really enjoy. You now have my permission to podcast.
Still holds up. I'm telling you, it still holds up. A whole year later, it's still okay. A while ago that we talked about this huge electromagnet. I think it was like 50 feet in diameter. So it's bigger than a normal set of lanes on a highway. And they have to transport it from New York, where it was made, to Fermilab in Illinois. And for whatever reason, they couldn't build it in Illinois. I don't know. And also, it was made in such a way to be so delicate that they had to like only drive it at night and put it on a boat because it would be more stable. Because even tilting it more than something like 15 degrees would damage it. I don't know. I think they kind of set themselves up for failure on that one for how to add too many artificial constraints. But the good news is it made
It
it.
was the ultimate egg race.
Yeah. So
Steady.
there's some cool pictures of it traversing, it's on its journey. And I mean, the nutty thing is that it looks like, even though it's now, at its home, it's still not going to be until 2016, I think, before we start getting results out of it. So,
Well, that was an
science.
exhausting trip. It needs some time to
Yeah.
rest, recharge.
So science kind of can move slowly, unfortunately. I'm hoping that they figure out whatever they need to figure out some more with it. But they can't all be the Large Hadron Collider,
Well, I mean, but what if they're going to use it to discover something that ends up destroying the universe? Or at least,
right?
human existence. Then we want them to be as slow and methodical as possible.
That's probably a really good point. Yeah, let's not create a black hole. Let's not.
No.
Although I haven't heard of any black holes happening around the Large Hadron Collider recently. Although I feel like they had some trouble with it. I don't know if it's completely up and running and fixed, but science marches on somewhere else, hopefully. Hopefully in space. I hope we get that science in space thing kind of worked out. Still a fan of science in space. It's still a thing.
It's all baby steps.
Especially with a, multi-ton, 50-foot wide electromagnetic ring. Gotta
The
be really
most one
careful.
of the most attractive donuts on the planet.
Get it? Attractive? Props.
It's no psycho donut, but still.
Sorry to have put that thought, that really awful pun, into everybody's head right now, but scientists recently figured out how to implant memories, or at least that's what the headline was. We'll
Yeah,
link.
that's not what the fact is.
We'll link the original article. I mean, It was found on, I found it on io9.com, which is generally a good kind of science and science fiction.
With the sensationalist journalism.
Yeah, it is maybe the slightest bit sensationalist, because if you read the article, it was not memories in a person, not by a long shot. It's memories in a mouse, and it's not necessarily a memory so much as it is a kind of Pavlovian response. So the short form, at least from what I was able to read, was that they essentially put a mouse in two boxes. One box where it would receive an electric shock, and one box where it wouldn't. But they're able to essentially induce similar enough conditions in the second box that it triggers their fear response. So they, I guess the boxes look different, but they used light to say, okay, well, this is, you're in box one when this light is on. And when it was in box two, they would shine the same light and it would get, they would freak out that it was going to be electrically shocked. Maybe IO9 simplified it a little too much, and I'm sure I simplified it, you know, much further just talking about it just now. So it's possible that, you know, it's lost in a little bit of translation there. But it sounded to me just not a memory. I don't think of, like, I got, like pain response is necessarily a memory so much as a reflex. So, I don't know. When I think memory, I think things that are a lot more fully formed.
Like Total Recall. Yeah.
So I only have fully formed memories of the Arnold Schwarzenegger Total Recall. I don't have any memories of the Colin Farrell Total Recall.
Then you're lucky, because I remember that movie not being so great. Why, Cranston? Why?
Yeah, that's such a bummer. Bryan Cranston was in it, because I bet he did a good job, but he's not in it for very long.
No.
So
it had all the right parts and just not the good execution.
Okay.
Because the acting was all, you know, pretty good.
Yeah.
They had good actors, or people who at least have done good work in the past. Jessica Biel notwithstanding.
Oh, come on. She was awesome in Stealth, you know, with the...
Oh, I missed that one. On purpose.
I think I caught some of it on a weird afternoon rain delay kind of situation. Not the best movie, by the way.
And just to preempt the people who are going to throw Blade Trinity in my face, you're wrong. Wesley Snipes and Ryan Reynolds own that movie. If anything, Kris Kristofferson is ahead of Jessica Biel in that movie. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good Blade film.
It was a good bad movie.
There's places for that. I mean, you should have some facility, because I think not every movie has to be kind of big and deep and everything else. There is such a thing as a popcorn movie. You want something that's enjoyable, and those are very squarely in that territory.
If they did develop memory implantation technology, would there be movies you would have removed from your memory?
That's a really interesting thought, because I think, you know, as traumatic as we joke that those movies are, they're not traumatic. I mean, they're just bad. And if memory works the way I hope it does, and not the way it does in a computer where it's a, you know, an actual finite amount of space, and it doesn't... it's not plastic at all or changeable, then it would be, I think that would be bad to muck with memory. Cause I think, you know, even kind of bad memories inform kind of good ones a little bit.
Could there be a point in the future where when you connect to the internet through your brain device, because that's how it's going to be in the future, obviously, is there a way you could set like your backup? So when you log on, you know, your memories are saved. And then once you go surfing on the internet, sometimes you see things you wish you had not seen on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Is there just like, all right, we can hit the red button. Yeah. And you reset to your previous backup. It's like, I never saw that.
The 15-second rewind.
Yeah, and you just leave yourself a link that says, don't go to this link.
Yeah, that would... I think that has the possibility of being abused pretty heavily. It'd have to be something where you could... See, I think that falls into the trap of, do you remember, I'm not going to remember the Next Generation episode, but there was the episode where they had to erase everybody's memory to lose like a week or something because they didn't want to accidentally stumble upon this alien race and essentially destroy it or otherwise mess it up. And so the idea was, let's go back in time or let's pretend we just missed a week. And they left too many clues, essentially. There was that thing that Crusher was studying that grew, and you know, one moment it was regular, one moment it was bigger, and then it turned out Data had the key to everything because, of course, you know.
Oh yeah, because he was a plot device.
Does that?
he was already a device, but you know, I guess a person.
Yeah. Yeah, I think erasing your memory would cause too much dissonance about what was erased. Because I think that, like I said, it could be abused. It could be the kind of thing that people just go and they erase their memory just kind of constantly. And I feel like it would be like re-recording, you know, on a... I'm gonna get it as soon as I say it. Recording, you know, on a tape again and again and again, it just keeps wearing it down. You know, yeah, tape.
Not only could you use it to forget bad things that you wish you had not seen, you could also erase good things so you get that same experience of seeing something amazing for the first time.
Hmm. You mean alcohol isn't good enough for you?
I mean, the caveman had the club. We've progressed beyond that.
that has some also cool applications. You're right. I think that is an interesting way of looking at it, rather than removing a bad thing, removing a good thing, so it the novel kind of appearance is there. That is kind of cool.
That seems more attractive to me than creating a false memory.
Sure.
And being given a false memory.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's still a true memory for you. You're just experiencing it for the first time again.
Yeah. Hmm. Once memory becomes malleable, the world is... What was I just talking about?
Oh, well, it,
But then, what if you also develop time travel, and then you could travel back in time and make yourself forget things before?
Oh, time travel always makes stuff so messy. But, I think memory plasticity, I think it really, really would depend on how much... the side effects would be afterwards for me. I think I do really, really like the idea, but I feel like it would have some kind of lasting like effect on how you perceive things or how your passage or your understanding of the passage of time or causality or things like that kind of work.
Yeah, but time's just a made-up concept anyways. So, who cares?
Yeah, well, you know.
Life is experience, not a stretch of time.
Well, I think it merits some further study for sure, and maybe not just electrocuting mice.
Yeah, let's not do that. People, I want human trials.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to know what they would consider an engram or whatever the discrete kind of memory would be, like you know, the flavor of something or something that would be, you know, really really discreet and easily to define, like the boundaries of. So it's not, you know, a very, you know, weird and nuanced thing like, you know, going to Mars.
That would be a crazy way to assassinate somebody. Someone that says like a peanut allergy and you make them forget they have a peanut allergy.
I feel like there are other ways to accomplish, you know, that assassination, especially if they have a peanut allergy.
Just throw a bag of peanuts at them.
Tip the food delivery guy or something to change the order. Whatever. There's ways of making this work without you know, involving wholesale memory destruction. But
well, I mean, it seems like with most things that involve technological advancements that we talk about on this podcast, not a thing in reality, still should be a plot device in movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this... For sure. I think the implanted memories thing has to be in a movie if it's not been already. I guess it was kind of an Inception, sort of. It's not so much, but that was more dream based. So you're implanting.
Well, no, I mean that is what it is. They're implanting the memory that they thought of something
through it,
essentially.
Through a dream. Sure. Okay. And I guess Total Recall kind of had a thing like that. Yeah. They should just do another movie like Total Recall, but not do Total Recall again.
Yeah. Not they put should... a tunnel through the center of the Earth for some no explainable reason.
Or they should just erase everyone's memory of the new Total Recall. Actually, that would be maybe...
That's stage one. That should be stage one. If you're going to use it in the real world, there's real world applications. Please erase the memory of the new Total Recall. From my memory. That's my request. You hear that, future me? If you're listening to this, come back in time and erase that from my memory.
Yo,
let my memory of Bryan Cranston be untarnished.
Go forward in time, get the memory erasing machine, then come back in time and then erase that memory from us.
Yes.
And then leave us the time machine too, so we can, you know, do cool stuff. Has it happened yet? Did it happen yet?
It happened for me. I don't know. Do you remember?
Maybe it happened and I forgot.
We did it and then we made ourselves forget.
So we could experience it again the next time.
Oh. And that's when logic collapses in on itself.
Well, if we'll move away from kind of one sci-fi movie and closer to another, I got a Leap Motion this week, almost wholly based on the thought that I could use it in a very Minority Report style fashion. So I'll link the Leap Motion, but it's a little, really tiny, essentially projector and camera that has, you know, infrared LEDs in it, and then I think two cameras, so it can do kind of a depth perception, stereographic kind of vision. And you stick it on your desk, kind of in front of your computer, and it points straight up. And so when you move your hand or hands into view, it will detect them, you know, in 3D space and can detect shapes. And they've written algorithms so it'll detect individual fingers and orientation of hands. And it can do, you know, both hands and all 10 fingers independently as it's going. And it launched, like, at the beginning of last week. And admittedly, when I got one and I played with it, it was really rough. Like, there were no applications for it. They actually took, in my opinion, a cue from the Xbox store and the PlayStation store, in that on day one there was DLC. Like, it came with one application that lets you kind of visualize your hands in this kind of space, but to do anything else with it, you had to download it. And there were a few free demos of things, but anything that sounded more interesting was a paid thing. So you they had an instrument that kind of looks like a harp, and so it would draw, you know, the lines on the screen, and when you would reach your hand into the space, it would pluck the strings in kind of an interesting fashion. And I don't know. I just found the feedback to be really weird. They could have used that that thing we talked about, the haptic feedback, the air
cannon.
Yeah, the air cannon thing. I mean, it would help a little bit, but you'd still you know, the feedback is still weird because you're just kind of waving your hands in the air to do things. And it's not very practical yet. I mean, there was one, as of last week, there was only one application that let you interact with, you know, your normal desktop applications. Now there are two, but the first one was out and out bad because it was gesture based, but they defined the gestures that everything did, which I thought was horrible because, you know, they said, okay, in order to scroll, you have to move your hand kind of like this. And I'm like, that's not what I think of for scrolling, especially because you can't adjust the sensitivity at all. So what would happen was I would stick my hand in the page and I would barely move it and the whole page would scroll by. And it's, it was just broken. But there's a new one that, it lets you define the gestures, and there's, something like 30 or 40 different ones, and then you can assign those to shortcuts or, you know, actions or whatever, just as you like. So you could make a motion that is like really weird, for example, like turn, you know, there was one that was making a circle in the air counterclockwise with your hand, and their idea was, okay, you could use that to kind of go back if you're browsing or something like that. But I think that's too fine of emotion, so I just want a, like, I'm, you know, a very Minority Report style, like I'm swinging my hands very wildly and
yes,
very big gross motion, and that's what it does, and that's what I made it do. I made a motion which is hide all of your windows, and I do it by essentially swinging my hand from right to left kind of very quickly in a, you know, just like he does in the movie when he's trying to hide the pre-crime about himself.
Yeah, have you thrown Minority Report on the screen yet while you were playing with the leap motion?
Oh, that would have been perfect. Just to throw, like, when I hide it, it puts up Minority Report.
Yeah, where's the hand gesture to play Minority Report?
Yeah.
That would default every time.
Yeah.
Just cue up that scene.
I mean, I think the window management stuff, I think you can do. The main problem that really comes out of it, and I noticed this after, so I was playing with it for maybe a couple hours on Friday, and I had some coworkers come by and we're messing around with it. The main thing that's that people find is that after like 15 minutes of using it, your arms get tired. It's not a natural thing to move stuff with your hands in space this much. I mean,
for a keyboard jockey.
Yeah, for a keyboard jockey like me, I guess. Yeah, it's kind of oddly tiring, and I think not necessarily that it would create its own class of you know, job-related stress kinds of things.
Repetitive stress.
Right. I mean, I could see how it might, because you're, especially if you're doing the same kind of motion for whatever reason, you know, again and again. But
it tore my rotator cuff when I was scrolling.
I mean, it adds a lot. I mean, you're using a lot more muscle groups, right? For scrolling, I move the my scroll wheel like a quarter of an inch, right? Versus I have to stick my hands up. I pick them up off the keyboard away from what I was typing or looking at or whatever. And then I move them in kind of a motion. Then I have to put them back where they were to work on what I was doing. Not only that, the whatever keyboard shortcut method you've already established takes over pretty quickly, or at least for me. So I had tried another thing. I use multiple desktops on my screen, so I'll have one screen, but I'll have three different like workspaces that I'll be in, and I keyboard shortcut in between them. So I thought, okay, well, I'll make a wave my hand shortcut to go between them, because it does do an animation when you move between the spaces. But I found that I would move the space with I pick my hand up and move the space, and then as soon as I put my hand back down, I would use the keyboard shortcut to go back or go in whatever other space, and it was just so much faster because my hand was already on the keyboard to do whatever I was doing. So I think there are some things that are interesting that you can do with it that are like 3D manipulation of things, and those are more, those feel better, right? Like if you were working on a 3D model of something and you wanted to turn it, I think it's more intuitive to turn it with like if your right hand is dominant and you're using that to paint it, you would turn it with your left hand and paint it with your right. So there is one application where it's like a molecule and you're pointing at stuff using the mouse and you're rotating it using your hand in space. And I think that kind of thing lends itself a lot better. But just daily, I want to, you know, switch between apps. I think I'll still Alt-Tab. It's just faster.
maybe this is the key to Windows 8 not sucking.
Possibly.
Probably not. No, it's not. I'm sure it's not. That thing's a piece of crap.
No. Well, 8.1, they're putting the start menu back, right?
Oh, good. Two steps forward, one step back. Yeah. Or one step forward, two steps back.
Although, from what I understand for the start menu, as soon as you hit it, all it does is it brings you back to the... So you have a start menu on the desktop, but when you click on the start menu, it just brings you back to the tile interface. So.
Oh, well, that's dumb.
Yeah.
Sounds like Microsoft.
So that's 8.1, which I think is actually already released to manufacturing. Anyway, I know I can get a beta of it through work, but I don't even want Windows 8, like in the first place. So I don't know, but that's a whole other topic.
Windows 8, not a thing.
Leap Motion.
You heard it here last. Yeah. Windows 8, not a thing.
But the Leap Motion, I think, has a lot of possibility. There are a lot of game demos that are really cool because of how much it can detect your hands. So there are at least, unfortunately, four different Rock, Paper, Scissors games. But there is one that I'm thinking about getting, which is a quick draw kind of Western-inspired shooting game. And so you stick both hands in the air, and then when it's time to draw, you have to, you know, form a kind of gun with your pointer finger and thumb and then shoot at the bad guy. But it also will detect where you're pointing. So not only do you have to be fast, you also have to be accurate about it. which I think is a little, you know, novel use of the technology. Maybe not the most productive.
I saw when I was doing some reading about Leap Motion, they have an app called Exoplanet.
Oh.
Which is like you can look at night sky or, you know, different astrological or astronomical phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And you can control it in a 3D model.
Oh, so you're doing the stellar cartography from Generations. Yes.
So you should get that. So we can do that.
That was possibly the best scene in that movie.
No, it was.
That is right, right? Am I connecting that memory correctly? I'm going to get an electric shock if I don't have that right, I'm sure. That was Generations, right? Or was it?
Yeah, with the ribbon of light and...
Yes, Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah, Malcolm McDowell.
Right. Oh, there are many good choices in that space. Speaking of many good choices, this week is Silicon Valley Beer Week, which I didn't know was a thing until Sunday when I walked into a place and they had a sign saying, "Hey, it's Silicon Valley Beer Week."
And I didn't know that until you told me you were going to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's cool. I mean, they're partnering with a lot of mostly local brewers, although there are some that are not. I mean, there are some that are from the South Bay in Silicon Valley. Like the one that the brewer that I've had probably the most beer from in the last 3 days has been actually Lagunitas.
That's because it's a great beer from a great place.
Yep. I had Undercover Investigation shut down both Monday and yesterday. I've had the IPA both yesterday and today. Although today I'm branching out. I had a couple different other beers. I had a Rogue. Their Voodoo Donuts. That Rogue is from Portland, so it's, you know, it's the kind of thing where it's like, that's not a local brewer, but whatever. It's good, it's beer, I'm not going to complain. But Rogue did a beer in conjunction with Voodoo Donuts, which, if you're from the South Bay, is very similar to Psycho Donuts without being the same. As far as I know, one of them copied the other and then just have been kind of quiet about it. I don't know. You know, they both have cereal on donuts. They call them different things. They both have a couple things. Well, the folks in Portland put it together. So there's a beer that's called Maple Bacon Ale. And it does taste and smell like both maple and bacon, but mostly like the bacon part.
That's because bacon is supreme and shuts down everything else.
Right. It pretty much does. And if you have it, that bacon kind of flavor really lingers. Like maybe 20 minutes after I'd had it, I was still kind of smelling and tasting it, which is a little disturbing that much longer after you have it. But it was good. One thing that I've been doing, and maybe I'll share a thing or two from this, but there's a beer notebook called 33 Beers. Have you seen that? Or
no.
So they make a few different ones, but it's just 33beers.com. And they have a bunch of different dimensions that you'll rate beer on. So it's a beer notebook. So each page is a beer, and there's 33 pages in the notebook, hence 33 beers. And you write down a bunch of stuff, like whether it came from a bottle or on draft, where you got it, the alcohol content. And then the crowning achievement is there's a little graph. It's a circular graph, and it has a bunch of different hash marks on it from 1 to 5. And each of those hash marks is a quality about the beer, like how much alcohol do you taste? How sweet is it? How bitter is it? How sour is it? Is it hoppy? Is it kind of dry? Do you taste malt or toffee? And so you mark all of those things from 1 to 5, and then you draw a shape. You connect the dots kind of in a circle around all of the different dimensions of it, and then you get a shape for that beer. And what I'm finding really interesting is there are beers with specific shapes that I like. So, I mean, I'm not a super taster by any means. Like, I'm sure if I got the same beer, twice in the span of, like, you know, a week, or even closer than that, maybe even the same day, I would probably rate the two experiences differently. but it has been fun to look at it, because I do especially around IPAs, have a pretty good sense of the ones I like do taste alike. Like, I do see the shapes kind of being very similar. So that's been kind of cool. I think also the visualization aspect of it is really neat. And they do make taster notebooks for a bunch of different things. Like, I actually heard about it first with 33 coffees. But the problem with coffee that I find is that in the amount of time it would take to kind of get enough sips in to really get a flavor profile from it, you'd have had that whole coffee.
And then you're all jacked up.
Right. At least for beer, you'll probably get through like a third of the beer, maybe a half of the beer, and then you still have half the beer to kind of just enjoy flavor-wise. It's been fun. I think a little bit of kind of self-documentation is good. And we've talked about that before, right? With,
empirical metrics. Evidence of deliciousness.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as it goes, though, you know, it's... I've been kind of meticulous about it, only because I want to fill the notebook, so every time I have a beer, I'm putting it down. But I do skip it if I've had the same beer, you know, more than once. Like, I had a little something. Also, a Lagunitas beer. once on Sunday, and then I had the Wild one on Saturday. And I didn't write down the Wild one when I had it again on Tuesday. Although, you know, it would have been
all this talk of beer and donuts is making me hungry and thirsty. Now, well, I want to go get some donuts and beer.
I have a beer handy, so I'm in the right place.
So, well, I think we're going to need to cut the podcast at this point, so I can go get some beer and donuts. It is now 9:52 p.m. and it's time for beer and donuts. See you at work tomorrow morning. 8 a.m. bright and early. Beer and donuts.
Not a bad choice. Not a bad choice. Well, let's call it this week. It's a little shorter than usual, but I think we'll make up for it soon enough.
I think that it's, if there's going to be an excuse, beer and donuts is that excuse.
Yeah, it's a good excuse. Good stuff. Well, we'll record again next week, right? Hopefully, probably.
We'll see.
Yeah, we may have a slight programming change next week, but we will put something up next week. It won't, we don't want you to lose faith. We've been at it for a year. We don't want to, you know, I guess we got our year. We can start dropping them now. But we'll put it together. There have been some scheduling things that we've yet to work out, but we'll get it together for next week. Good stuff.
Beer, donuts.
Do it. Enjoy it, Brendan. Talk to you soon.